Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our first show, Voices for Justice. My name is Michelle Bart, and I will be your host today, July 15th, 2009. We are broadcasting live from both Washington and Florida this afternoon. I'd like to let our listeners know that today's show is 45 minutes, but towards the end, we will conclude for the podcasting purpose. But if dialogue warrants us to continue, please feel free and stay on. Before we get started with today's show, I would also like to let the listeners know that this show is something that was created from many, many emails and MySpace comments from people through the Kaylee Anthony case. As everyone knows, I oversaw the website and the MySpace for many, many months, and so many questions had come up during the search efforts for Kaylee Marie, and then, of course, in through December and still till this day. So this show came about for many reasons, for many family members of those missing, as well as many other endeavors that we do through Helping Heroes and National Vigil for Hope. So Voices for Justice is a new show that we hope will spark some interest from all of you and folks wanting to have a voice for justice, no matter if it's a missing persons case, entertainment, news happening. We want the residents of the communities across the country to have a voice. So with that said, today marks an anniversary. 1 year ago today, the nation became aware of a 2.5-year-old angel named Kaylee Marie Anthony that had gone missing from her home in Orlando, Florida. Unfortunately, on December 19th, the medical examiner out of Orlando announced that the remains found on December 11th were those of Kaylee Marie. Today's guest will take your calls as we explore the recent release of the autopsy report that the remains of a young child that was found in Orlando. Professor Shelley Schaefer is with us. She is our guest today. With over 20 years as a crime scene investigator and a professor of forensics, Professor Schaefer has served on many board of directors, including the Board of Code Enforcement for Seminole County. She's also been seen and heard as a forensic expert for media outlets, including Fox 35 in Orlando, and she'll soon receive her PhD in criminal justice. Thank you, Professor, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you know, and I know that a case unraveled a year ago. It became known that Kaylee Anthony was missing, and soon after, in December, remains were found. But before we get started, I wanted to have the listeners understand, how does a CSI, we all see it on television, and the glitz of Hollywood, but obviously that's not the real the real picture of what really happens. How and why does one become a crime scene investigator?
Well, I got involved in crime scene investigation way before the explosion of the TV shows. We do not drive Hummers. We don't wear our high heels. We go to the scene and we process a scene for evidence. We collect the evidence and we examine it. People are attracted to it to see fascinating cases, to be a part of an investigative process, to be involved in the criminal justice system, to kind of put a puzzle together and piece the evidence together so we then can come to a conclusion on what occurred and hopefully catch the perpetrators of different types of crimes.
Do you, now as a professor, do you enjoy teaching forensic more so than working in the field?
I wouldn't say more so. It's a different aspect. I'm taking what I have learned and my experiences, and I'm passing them on to the younger generation. I wouldn't necessarily say more so, but after 20 years on the road, it gets a little tiresome and going from call to call. So it's a different, I'm taking my career, my education to a different level and to pass it on to people that want to become CSIs.
How different are things today compared to when you first began your lifetime work?
Well, way back then, there was no crime scene technology program, so all of my degrees are in criminal justice. There was no crime scene per se degree. Now there are degrees in crime scene technology and crime scene investigation. Technology's come by leaps and bounds. It has grown, and you know, DNA just came about in the mid to late 80s, and it's still being perfected today. So with that technology, coupled with several other technologies, chemicals that we now use to process fingerprints or to get fingerprints or make them visible to the eye, we have technology now that we didn't have back in the day.
I wanted to let callers and listeners know that the call-in number today is 347-838-8622. And whether you're interested in forensics or you want to be a CSI or you have followed the Kaylee case for the past year, we encourage you to call in with your questions for Professor Schaefer. So moving into the case, it's obvious you must have seen many different circumstances throughout your course of work. How did you come to know the Kaylee Anthony case, and what was your first observation from an outsider's point of view?
From an outsider looking in, it was basically, how could this occur? It was all over the news outlets in the Orlando area, Central Florida area, and it was just the first thing that we had heard from the media was that the mother of Kaylee, Casey Anthony, took the police to the apartment where she left her with the babysitter, and no one had lived there for several months, which I think I was astounded by that. It was just amazing that that could even be possible. And I think everyone else that was looking in was thinking the same thing. How could this be? So that was, you know, we were just getting media information, and we're just looking at it like, what a horrific thing. This child is missing, and nobody knows where she is.
Well, moving in and seeing what we've seen and heard, months of circumstantial evidence, at least in my opinion, and again, for the listeners, I'm not a law enforcement agent. I'm a publicist, been in public relations for over 20 years. And this case opened my eyes to many things. But most importantly, Kaylee will always have a special place in my heart. And so for me, reading the documents was hard, not as hard as it was for the family. But I guess I have questions, too, and a lot of the questions that the listeners and the callers will hear today will be through not only my questions that might be on my mind, but questions that I have kept from many, many friends of Kaylee's on her MySpace site and the website that we had up in the beginning during the search efforts. So if you're listening, and you hear a question that you've asked me many times, it may just be your question. So moving into the autopsy report, there's been a lot of circumstantial evidence. But recently, obviously, we know that the autopsy report was released to the public. But my question is, typically, is an autopsy report, especially in a circumstance like this, that remains were found, typically 36 pages long? Is that the norm for an autopsy report?
A 36-page autopsy report is quite lengthy. However, this case does involve a lot of things that need to be addressed, a lot of circumstantial evidence that needs to be addressed. There was many doctors involved in the autopsy itself and the examination in regard to different aspects of the autopsy. But 36 pages is quite lengthy.
Okay. You've reviewed many documents on this case, but in particular the autopsy report. You've had time to look it over, especially since we booked you for the show. What is your opinion on the report in a nutshell?
I think in a nutshell, it's well written. It covers most of the aspects of what transpired while the doctors were doing their examination. There's a couple of things that are a bit ambiguous or vague, which I'm sure will come out probably in later reports. But I think with the information they were given, you know, it's said quite often that the victim or a body will speak to the investigator. I think in this case there was very little speaking that was done by the remains that were found, but I think the doctors did what they could with what they were given.
You brought up investigators. When the investigators, the law enforcement agencies, were called to the scene on December 11th in Florida, can you walk the listeners through a call of this nature from not only from an investigator standpoint, but as a crime scene investigator?
Well, it's quite often that the police departments, when they're given a call like this, they'll immediately call for crime scene. Once someone has responded to the scene and they see that something is not in the proper order or is in an area where it shouldn't be, or there's something of a suspicious nature, it's quite often that they'll call for crime scene. Crime scene usually waits for the lead investigators to arrive before doing anything. They may photograph the surroundings or something like that while they're waiting, and then the lead investigators will show up. Several different searches are conducted, photographs are taken, evidence is collected, or evidence is preserved, and the crime scene investigators are really not on the scene alone. They are working with the investigator. In this case, there were several different specialists that were called in, a botanist, an anthropologist, several different people. The chief medical examiner responded to the scene. So the crime scene just basically takes the pictures of what they're told to, looks for evidence, conducts searches with other investigators, and preserves evidence in the best manner that they can.
Okay. Just reminding listeners, if you'd like to call in, we have a couple callers that have called in. We'll put them on the air shortly with your questions. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. We're with Professor Schaefer, who is talking with us in regards to the Kaylee Anthony autopsy report that was recently released to the public, and we'll be happy to take your questions. We do have a caller on the line. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Voices for Justice. Do you have a question for Professor Schaefer?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, my name is Angel in Florida, and I've been following this case very, very, very closely, And I have a few questions for you. Number one, you refer to Professor Schaefer as Professor Schaefer, and I'd respectfully like to ask what Professor Schaefer's qualifications are in her field of expertise. Exactly what is it? Is she a forensic pathologist with an MD in internal medicine, or just what?
I have a Bachelor's of Science in Criminal Justice, a Master's of Science in Criminal Justice, and I have 20 years law enforcement experience. I teach both criminal justice classes and crime scene technology classes and have been deemed a forensic expert in my field.
Great. Would you say you have less of a you would have qualifications as Henry Lee as opposed to Michael Bodden, correct?
Correct.
Michael Bodden is an MD, whereas a forensic pathologist is an MD who specializes in forensic pathology. So I take it you're not a PhD, are you? You're an MS, right?
Correct. Dr. Henry Lee has a PhD in criminalistics, where Dr. Bodden has a PhD in medicine.
Right.
That being
so
the
a
difference.
True forensic pathologist who could truly report on the autopsy findings would have to have some pretty strict qualifications. Let me ask you a question, because I think that I studied the case very intensely. As long as, I go to crimeseekers.net, and we chat about the case all the time. There's the most wonderful people there, and we get into a lot of the details there. It's crimeseekers.net. It's a chat room. And the thing with me is they've released all the autopsy findings. In your opinion, do you feel that there is more that they have not released to the public under Florida sunshine laws?
Well,
is there a fingerprint? Is there
as far as the autopsy report, which is what we're focusing on today, the Florida law, as you refer to it, the sunshine law, does require that anything that is given to the prosecution and is turned over to the defense in discovery is subject to public review. So do I think I can just go by what I have and what has been released, which is the autopsy report that is 36 pages written by Dr. G? I am not personally working on the case, so I do not know what has been released to the defense. But
anything that has been released to the public has been released to the defense. Let me clue you in on that.
Well, thank you. I realize that's discovery. Thank you.
Yes.
Actually, that brings up a good question, Professor Schaefer. In regards to the autopsy report, you stated to Angel that based on Dr. G's report that it seems to be complete, but from my conversations with many people, what about the nuclear DNA report that's not attached to the final report? And she's basing a conclusion on an other test or DNA testing that was done by the FBI. When will we see that report?
The report says that the DNA was done by the FBI, as you've stated, and Dr. G does not attach any of the FBI reports to her autopsy report. The FBI reports have come out separately. However, we have not seen that nuclear DNA report. So either the FBI has not released it or the prosecution has not released it yet.
What would we be looking for in a nuclear DNA report that is basically, if I'm correct, isn't that the portion that actually declared who the remains belong to?
The nuclear DNA is the DNA from both parents, which, according to the autopsy report, lines up to Kaylee Anthony's standard reference sample, which pointed them that the DNA taken from the right tibia of the remains that were found in the woods was DNA of Kaylee Marie Anthony. The FBI report would corroborate this. and tell us that they performed this report this way. It would show us the genetic markers. It would have charts and graphs showing us the genetic markers from the standard reference sample to those of the remains that were found.
In Florida law, when you have documents that are to be released to the public, and in this case, I believe it was Judge Strickland that ordered the autopsy report be released to the public, everyone was waiting in anticipation. Again, I'm no law enforcement agent, but I didn't see any smoking gun there. With this particular report, if it's based on the conclusion of testing that the FBI did, shouldn't that be a part of the autopsy report that's released to the public that finalizes the sex of...
Well, no, not exactly, because this report is written by Dr. G, and Dr. G did not complete the DNA comparison. The FBI did, and as been seen in this case, the FBI is handing out their own documents, which come out sporadically and are released to the prosecution. The prosecution then releases it to the defense, and it becomes public record. But Dr. G doesn't really, she notes where the DNA, the nuclear DNA, was taken from and compared by whom, but she's actually doing an examination of the remains and of the body, so she's not listing the FBI report in her autopsy report.
An email just came to us. Someone's asking, the conclusion of the identity on the tibia, that's what you're stating that the DNA was performed on.
Yes.
Why wasn't that able to be examined and concluded by the Orlando examiner? Is that office not prepared to do a test like that?
I would think they are prepared to do a DNA test. I am not sure as to why they would have sent it to Quantico, Virginia. Quantico, Virginia, and the FBI lab is the most advanced and technological lab in the country, and the FBI was already involved in this case. So perhaps they just wanted to send it to a higher tech lab, so they sent it to Quantico. I'm not sure why or what their rationale was for that, but it appears that that's what they've done.
Did you see anything in the autopsy report that explained or justified why the tibia was the deciding factor and not the 18 teeth that they said was intact that they could have gotten DNA from there?
No, I did not see anything noted in the autopsy report as to why they took it from the tibia and not the teeth.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. Hello?
Hello. This
Hello.
Must be Simon from the 601 area code.
Hi, Simon. What's your question for Professor Schaefer today?
Well, actually, it's a multifaceted question. I have followed this case from the very beginning, and while the autopsy report is fascinating, why do you think it took 30 days for the child to be missing to be reported?
Well... Actually, Simon, what we're talking about today is the autopsy report.
You can call me later, Simon. I have my own ideas.
There you go. We'll post the professor's contact information on our site following the show, but we're not here to discuss the case. We're basically just here to have a voice and see that the autopsy report and answer any questions that viewers and folks that have emailed us throughout the months have had on their minds. So do you have a question for the professor regarding the autopsy report?
Oh, I have lots of questions.
I think you fit in with everybody else across the country.
Number one, the DNA, where it was taken from, it's interesting. Has anyone considered doing a second DNA analysis?
To my knowledge, they have not. You know, the defense at this point can do their own analysis, call in their own medical examiners, contact a DNA laboratory and have their own analysis done. But to my knowledge, I don't know that such is being done.
That's very curious. You know, you would think that the people involved would be more proactive.
You would surmise that that would be the case. But, you know, this case has been really complex. We have a couple other callers. We'll be right back with you, Simon.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm getting off the line.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us.
I'm the Simon from Blogger News Network.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us, Simon. And look for the professor's information on our site following the show.
We will indeed. Okay.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Another question that has come up. Let's discuss the duct tape. The duct tape that was found wrapped, I think I heard 5 times on a CNN segment, wrapped several times, wrapped 5 times around the base of the skull. Wouldn't DNA, possibly from vomit or saliva or even blood of Kaylee's, be found on that tape?
Well, the autopsy report states that there were several pieces of tape. It doesn't actually give a number, and it states that it was put on post-mortem, which would mean after death. So once the child is deceased, there can't be any vomiting. And the autopsy report also states that there was no trauma to the bones. So as far as DNA from vomit or blood, that wouldn't be there. However, what is interesting is if it was put on post-mortem, but before decomposition, that one would think that there would still be skin cells attached to the sticky side of the tape. And they are saying they did not get any DNA or fingerprints off of the tape. That's in an FBI report as well.
That coincides with some inconsistencies throughout the report. One that I read, and you may have your own opinion on this, Dr. Warren stated that the sex was undetermined of the toddler. But yet, in the final conclusion by Dr. G, I believe, the medical examiner, stated this was, in fact, Kaylee Anthony. Wouldn't that imply that the sex of the toddler was female, and that is an inconsistent statement from Dr. Warren?
Dr. Warren is an anthropologist who is examining the remains. And an adult person, by examining remains due to the pelvic region, you can tell male or female. In a toddler of that age, 2 and a half, it's very difficult, if at all possible, to tell if it's a male or a female. His report just states that according to his examination, which was just of the remains, he was unable to tell sex of the child. However, I believe Dr. G wrote it was that of Kaylee, based on the DNA that was performed by the FBI laboratory.
In regards to the autopsy release, it states that the autopsy was concluded on the 23rd of December, but Dr. G made the announcement that this was Kaylee Marie on the 19th. In a case like this, wouldn't you think that they would wait until the entire report and all of their investigation was complete before they would make that type of an announcement days before they concluded their report?
I would think that they would have waited until the 23rd. I would imagine the reason they came out early was due to pressure from the media, pressure from the family perhaps. You know, they maybe the DNA came back and they were prepared to say the remains were those of Kaylee Marie Anthony, but they were doing further testing until the 23rd. It would be, I would have concluded it on the or spoke about it on the day it was concluded, which was the 23rd.
Okay, let's go back to Angel. Angel, are you still with us?
Yes,
do
I
you
am.
Have any other question? Do you have any other questions for
well,
the professor?
I've studied quite a bit, and I've talked about this case very much in depth on crimeseekers.net. We have our own chat room that's really good with some real smart people. In fact, we even have a forensic pathologist who's an internal medicine doctor who I've discussed it. You talk about taking cells from the tibia. Cells can be taken from anywhere because any nucleated cell can give both parents DNA. The reason that the hair could only give maternal DNA was because the hair is not a nucleated cell. Correct, Ms. Schaefer?
The total DNA from a piece of hair can only be determined
maternal.
If they have the follicle or the root.
Right, the root. And if there's no root attached, the only thing they can tell is the maternal side. So they knew it was an Anthony, they knew it was a female Anthony, and they know that since Cindy was alive, and the great-grandma was alive, and Kelly and Casey was alive, and Kelly was missing, it had to be Kelly by process of elimination. My thing is that, I don't think the autopsy is going to be conclusive because you really don't have a manner of death. You have a cause of death, which is Dr. G, who's a real forensic pathologist with credentials, she says it's a homicide. And, you know, once you have the autopsy results, the family has to accept that this is Kelly. How come the Anthony family's not looking for the real killer if their daughter is so innocent?
Where would you suggest they look?
Well, really, we can't really speculate what the Anthony family, what
and we don't
they
know
are
what,
doing. And
what yeah,
they
we don't
are
know what
doing.
They are doing.
I think they're raising money is what they're trying to do to support their little habits, their house, their
and
boat,
that's based
you know.
On a, that's based on opinion. I wasn't unaware that they had a boat, but at
oh,
any
yes,
rate.
Oh, yes, CSS Kelly Marie, they've hooked up with Kid Finders, with the Milsteads. They know how to run non-profit charity organizations so that their rent and mortgage are paid.
Right, but Angel, let me remind the listeners today, this is about talking scientific and having voices
okay.
for justice through the autopsy, and despite whatever is going on in Florida with the defense or the family members, we have to remember that, you know, with National Vigil for Hope, we represent a whole vast array of families that are missing their children or loved ones, and despite whatever circumstances came out of this case and what will come out of the case when they go to court, this family lost somebody very precious to them. But this show isn't the platform to talk about anybody and what they're doing, because it's all hearsay, it's all opinion. So if you want the facts, I would say that you'd have to contact the Anthonys, but we really want to dissect the autopsy report, because somebody like myself who had been involved with this case and had a voice for a toddler who I believed was alive, I did believe that, and that is how I approached the situation by looking for a live Kaylee. I believe the witnesses I've interviewed, I've believed in the evidence that I have seen, and I had more evidence to prove that she was still with us than deceased. When December 11th rolled around, I felt like a dagger went in my heart. And so
I
have questions in regards to the autopsy report, because it does not bring me to closure. It does not bring the thousands of, and I believe at the last time I checked, the MySpace site, which is due to come down, they had over 10,000 friends, and I can't tell you the number of questions that came out of listening to her friends on MySpace and the millions of emails that we received in the course of 8 months. And so we want to make sure that callers know we have 10 minutes left on the air. Please feel free and call us at 347-838-8622 to ask your questions in regards to the autopsy report. But obviously there's a lot to be discussed, and who's to say that we won't do a future program longer than 45 minutes that we opted for this time around. But Angel, if you go to our site, Professor Schaefer will have her her information up on that later tonight, and you can contact her personally, and she'd be great for your blog too. So
can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
First of all, are you Michelle Bart?
I am.
Wonderful. I've wanted to meet you for a long time. I mean, I would like some personal advice on how to do what you do, because I think I could do it just as well. I think it's a wonderful thing that you're doing. It's a wonderful idea, concept for a business. I mean, I know it's an adverse situation for the Anthonys, but I know you got to make hay while the sun shines, you know.
We sure do appreciate you being with us, Angel. I have one more caller coming in. Thank you. Did somebody just join us?
I did, yes.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi.
To Voices for Justice. Do you have a question for Professor Schaefer before we close the show this evening?
I do have a question.
Okay.
Professor Schaefer, I was wondering, I am actually calling from North Carolina, and like many other people have followed this case over this entire year, due to the fact that the defense has not done any type of their own investigations into this and their own medical examiners, how do you think that will affect the trial in regards to all the information that was discovered by Dr. G at the time the body was found versus the defense doing nothing and now having nothing to go on?
Well, I think that we don't actually know if the defense has done nothing. I don't actually know. I mean, if you know something other than me, that's you know, great that you have that knowledge, but I don't actually know that the defense has done nothing.
Okay.
So I really can't comment on that. I know of documents that I can see, touch, and feel. I'm a scientist. I study fact. I study science. I don't have any independent knowledge of what the defense has or has not done.
Okay. And I was not aware the tape had been wrapped around five times.
No, I believe the autopsy report says several.
Several times.
Yes.
Which was post-mortem. Therefore, as you said earlier, there would be no indications of saliva, any kind of emesis or anything of that nature.
Correct.
Okay.
But you're saying that it was also applied prior to decomposition would imply that tissue should have been at least indicated.
I would think there would have been skin cells on the sticky side of the tape. However, that's not noted in the autopsy report.
Okay, I have one more question, if that's okay.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
The person, Angel in Florida, was asking why use the tibia instead of the teeth. Isn't the tibia more reliable for the type of DNA they used or needed?
I think the tibia would be more reliable than teeth, especially if teeth were so small. I believe the best place to get the DNA would be from the femur, which they did have. So I'm not exactly sure why they used the right tibia as opposed to other bones.
Okay. If the femur had been found away from the main area, do you think that would have been a reason they would not have used it?
Well, they do say that there was several bones that were away from where the skull was located. I'm not sure why that reason. I mean, as Angel did point out, or someone pointed out, why wouldn't they do two DNA tests? That's always a possibility. They could have done it from the femur and from the tibia. I'm not sure why that wasn't done. I would say, you know, double up on everything and make sure that we're totally accurate.
Right.
That would be my professional opinion.
I just wanted to let the listeners know that the call-in number is 347-838-8622. For podcast purposes, the show will end in 5 minutes, but we'll continue on taking your questions if you have any regarding the autopsy report, and we'll probably go over that time. So please note the phone number, 347-838-8622. But piggybacking on the dialogue that you both just were having, the first reports when the remains were found on the 11th of December, they said they sent the corpse, if I'm correct in stating something that was on one of the networks, to Quantico, and in the next breath, an anchor woman was stated saying she was confused because now they're saying only a partial corpse had been sent. If the report came out stating only the tibia had been examined at Quantico, wouldn't that imply that only that portion or that body part was sent and not everything else that had been previously told to media?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not well-versed on what the media says, nor do I wish to be. Again, I base my findings on facts and what can be proven and scientific conclusions. I have not heard that the entire remains, all of the bones were sent to FBI in the first place. What I'm basing it on is what the autopsy report says, which is just that the tibia was sent there and the rest of the remains were examined at the Orange Osceola Medical Examiner's office.
I have a question about that.
Go ahead. And we've also brought on another caller that might have a question as well.
Okay, that's fine. If they did not send anything else off, would that not be a possible negative for the prosecution?
I'm sorry, I don't understand. Would it be a possible negative?
Would it be a negative for the prosecution if they only sent off the tibia to be examined and not any other bones from an outside group, say Quantico?
I don't know that it would be a negative, but hopefully the defense would be on their game and get backup DNA reports by their sources. You know, according to the prosecution and what they're thinking and what Dr. G is thinking is that these remains, because of nuclear DNA from the right tibia, came back to the standard reference sample of Kaylee Marie Anthony. Now, what the defense does with that information would be on the defense. But the prosecution, apparently, is satisfied with the results they have.
Right.
Somebody
okay,
else
I know you have another caller. Nana
oh, no problem.
Says,
stick
thank
with
you very
us.
Much.
Thank
Whoa,
you.
Whoa, stick with us. We'll continue. The caller that just came on the line?
Hello?
Do you have a question? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, they hung up.
Hello?
Hello, do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I can see where this is headed. Okay?
What do you mean?
You're doing a very good job of spinning it. Okay, but I can see right where it's headed that this is not really Kaylee Anthony. Okay?
Oh, no, that's not what this is about. Trust
oh,
me.
That is what this is about, okay?
Thank you for your comment, ma'am. Next on the line.
Hello,
do you have a question?
Yes, I did. Also, I just wanted to clarify a comment that I just wrote. I believe that the tibia was used for the DNA because they used a 3-inch section of the bone, which they said would be destroyed during testing for toxicology. And just out of a show of respect for the poor baby's remains, I believe they desecrated the remains as little as possible. But my question was, do you find it definitive proof that the body was indeed placed there while intact and shortly after the date of June 15th, due to the scattering of the remains from apparent predation and the amount of roots and other foliage that had grown in and around the remains?
Unfortunately, I was not privy to go to the scene. I do not work for Orange County. I can go by what Dr. G has listed in her reports were that...
Yeah, the distribution of the remains was fairly in detail.
And that there was roots, and it is Dr. G's opinion that the remains were placed there shortly after the disappearance of Kaylee Marie Anthony. Again, I can only go by what I read from her report. I was not present at the scene.
Well, I was just referring to the fact that it showed and detailed that scavengers and predators had taken away full body sections, which in my opinion says that Kaylee was a complete body when she was placed there.
Okay, and what we have to also remember is that there were several people that had searched that area prior to December 11th. So, you know, I mean, I can only go off
of... I'd say the vicinity. I wouldn't say the exact area. I would say the vicinity.
And again, I was not on any of those searches, and I can only go by what Dr. G wrote in her report.
And let me let the... If we still have some listeners out there, know that... The purpose of this show was to answer the demand that so many of you, if you're listening, had of me in the course of the last few months. I chose July 15th because in my mind, July 15th was when we all met Kaylee Marie. This is in no way to stir the pot, as one caller had just indicated. This is just basically examining on a free rein, if you will, on Blog Talk Radio, and talking to a forensic expert that could answer your questions. We are not here for the defense, we're not here for the prosecution, and we're not here for the family, nor have any of them been on the call or have approved this show. We felt that the first show should be on something that is very special in many of our hearts, and Kaylee Marie will always be. August 9th is her birthday, and I hope that everybody will light a candle across the country. She would have been 4 years of age, and I think that Blog Talk Radio, as well as many other social outlets, such as what some of the callers had mentioned regarding blog sites, etc., are important to not only having a voice for justice in any case, but it shows the power of the media, it shows the power of the internet, and it shows the power how one person can have a voice, and if we all had that voice, we can continue to make a difference, not only in the lives of missing loved ones, but in the lives of anything that touches our heart. So with that, I'm going to close and say thank you to Professor Schaefer for being our guest today. Thank you very much. And thank
Pleasure
you to our
here.
Listeners and callers for calling in. Our next show will be July 29th at 1 p.m. Pacific time. And I leave you with the question, are you prepared when time matters most? We'll be joined by the founder and CEO of Instant Amber, who will join us to help you keep your loved ones safe before tomorrow possibly comes. So thank you for being a part of our first show, Voices for Justice, and we hope you all will join us again in the near future. And thanks again. Goodbye.